WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into Current Sports on this Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. As always, I am your host, Al Martin, and we've got a great show in store for you all today. Anthony Iani, former MSU men's basketball player and national motivational speaker at the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, will join me live in studio to talk about his incredible post-basketball career as he has now gone on a tour preaching the message of anti-bullying and speaking up for autism awareness. Anthony will join me live in studio. You do not want to miss that during the second half of our show. We'll also chat about position battles within the Michigan State football camp, fan safety in baseball, as well as a pretty cool feature on Ray Bentley, who played pro football for 10 years, including in two Super Bowls with the Buffalo Bills. Scott Pohl got a chance to sit down with Ray Bentley about his first novel entitled Driftwood. All of that and so much more. Again, we encourage you all to call in to be a part of the discussion throughout this entire hour. Call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Let's start this party like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Tuesday, August 25th. We start things with MSU football. MSU redshirt freshman Madre London has won the battle of the Michigan State football team's number one running back. Mark D'Antonio confirmed after Monday's practice that London tops the depth chart at the most intriguing position battle for the number five Spartans. And London said he had a 40-yard TD run and 70-yard run against the number one defense during Saturday's scrimmage. D'Antonio said John Reschke is still pushing Chris Frey for the starting spot at the outside money linebacker, vacated, of course, by Ed Davis, who suffered a season-ending injury at the beginning of preseason training camp. While things are becoming clear on the MSU depth chart, the Michigan football team is still a bit foggy, at least when looking at its quarterback position, in which there is still no clear number one guy. Fifth-year senior Jake Ruddock, or junior Jane Morris, will take the team's first snap of the season at Utah on September 3rd. In a vote of Midwest League field managers, the Lansing Lugnuts' Ryan McBroom has been named MWL, the Midwestern League's most valuable player, and honored on the league's postseason All-Star team at both first base and designated hitter. McBroom is the third Lugnut in team history to be selected as league MVP, joining Brian Dipperkak and Kevin Piller, both in 2004 and 2012, respectively. The Detroit Tigers, oh, was that a tough game to watch last night or what? They fell hard in a makeup game to the Cincinnati Reds, 12-5 the final last night, losing its fourth straight game and falling to 5.5 games in back of a wild card berth. It was the first time since April 28, 2009, the Tigers have allowed 10 runs in one inning. Wow, their previous high this season was 7. The Tigers now begin a three-game home series against the LA Angels. 6 Detroit Lions sat out of practice yesterday due to injuries. Caron Reed and Larry Wofford, important players at important positions, missed a third straight Detroit Lions practice Monday afternoon. And you had this laundry list to deal with. Defensive end, Ezekiel Ansah. Linebacker, Kyle Vannoy. Tight end, Eric Ebron. Linebacker, Kevin Snyder. While tailback, Joyke Bell and defensive tackle, Haloti Ngata, remain on the physically unable to perform list. Wow, all right. The annual Pistons Fit 5K a scenic trail run on the DTE Energy Music Theater grounds in Clarkston will take place at 9 a.m. on October 4th. It's $35 when registering before race day or $40 on race day. Registration will begin at 7:30 a.m. on that day. All participants will receive tickets to a Pistons home game and a discounted rate for family and friends. There's one free post-race beer for runners 21 and older. How about that? And complimentary snacks and beverages for all runners. The event will be emceed by Pistons announcer John Mason, who with appearances by Pistons entertainment teams and mascot Hooper. The L.A. Lakers are discussing the possibility of signing free agent forward Meta World Peace, previously known as Ron Artest, to a one-year contract. No deal has been agreed upon, but there have been talks between the Lakers and World Peace's representatives. There are varying degrees of interest within the Lakers organization about bringing him back to the franchise at 35 years old, although the idea has been met with enthusiasm from Lakers star Kobe Bryant. And last but not least, Florida State running back Dalvin Cook was found not guilty Monday of misdemeanor battery after a woman accused him of punching her in the face in June. Soon after the verdict, Florida State announced it has reinstated Cook, who had been suspended indefinitely. Pending the results of the trial, he is eligible to return when the Seminoles practice today. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, please call 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there. I'll read it live here on our airwaves. Or you can even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR, and I'll do the same. Without further ado, it's time to start the show.
It's just a lot of fun driving at 230 miles an hour. You know, that's pretty much it. This is what it's all about. And the key to it all is having the fans that come out to watch. And, you know, we want to put on a show. We want to go out there and show what we can do. And hopefully that entertains people. You have to endure a little bit of suffering. But, you know, it's a small price to pay for driving a race car for a living.
Couldn't see the light, and whenever I'd look up, I couldn't see the sky. Sometimes when I'm standing, it seems like I've been walking for miles, and my heart could be crying dead in the middle of a smile. But then I climbed the hills and saw the mountains. All that helped, cause I was lost. Then I felt the strong wind. Heard a small voice saying, the storm is over.
Storm is over now.
And I can see the sunshine
somewhere beyond the clouds.
I feel heaven, yeah.
Heaven is over me.
Come on and set me free.
Justin Wilson sadly passed away on Monday, a day after he was struck in the head by a piece of debris during the Verizon IndyCar Series race at Pocono Raceway. He was hit by debris from the car of rookie Sage Karam, who was leading the ABC Supply 500 when his number 8 racing Chevrolet spun on its own in turn 1 on lap 179 of the 200-lap race. IndyCar drivers are far more susceptible to head injuries because the cockpits are open and their helmets are exposed. Breaking news of Wilson's passing took place late evening of yesterday, news that sent shockwaves throughout not only the racing world, but the entire sports community. Many individuals reaching out via social media, on Twitter and Facebook, to express their deep sadness and condolences upon hearing of this unfortunate news. Wilson won 7 times over 12 seasons in open wheel racing and finished as high as 5th in the Indianapolis 500. An acclaimed sports car racer, he won the prestigious 24 Hours of Daytona with Michael Shank Racing, and he competed in 20 Formula One races in 2003 before moving to the U.S. to join Champ Car. Such sad news anytime we hear about a passing. Of course, this one directly affecting the racing community. And I really didn't know how serious this injury was when it initially happened and occurred on Sunday. I remember watching SportsCenter that afternoon, and they showed the highlight of Wilson's car colliding right with that arid piece of debris. You know, you can see it clearly hit him in the cockpit, and the debris goes, you know, like a couple hundred feet in the air. I mean, just crazy, crazy footage, man. And he, you know, initially, right when it happens, goes unconscious, and his car hits the railway. And you see the helicopter come in and transport him to the hospital. But, you know, we had talked about in our quick hit headliners yesterday how Wilson was in a coma and in serious condition. But no one fathomed just how serious it was, to the point where Wilson would no longer be walking on this earth. Sad stuff. And I wanted to bring this up because this is a conversation that needs to happen within the racing community, specifically when talking about Indy cars. Because I've always wondered and always been puzzled as to why there is no overhead protection when it comes to an Indy car. Of course, in NASCAR, they have it. And we all know how secure inside the cockpit a NASCAR is. But in Indy cars, I mean, you're basically racing and you have nothing over your head. So if a crash does happen, it's even more amplified from a health standpoint because you don't have that overhead protection. You have no protection in front of your face. You are just like driving a motorcycle out there. There is no protection above your head or around your body other than your legs, which are, of course, hitting the throttle. Sad news, though. Sad, sad stuff. And we would be remiss if we didn't offer our condolences to the racing community and those who felt sadness upon hearing this story, because I sure did. Anytime you talk about anyone losing their life, it's sad stuff. And you just feel like this certainly could have been avoided if IndyCar racing had better precautions when it comes to the safety of their drivers. Sad stuff, folks. In a sad way to start the show, but you know, I definitely wanted to offer my condolences to Justin Wilson, his family, and the racing community. Again, folks, we do have a great show in store for you. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I'm excited because you know, a heavy topic we'll be tackling today deals with the harsh reality of bullying. We sort of highlighted it last week as well when we talked with Marvelous Mark Mero, a former professional wrestler. He was on the show because he's a motivational speaker post his professional wrestling career, and he's been going to different schools and preaching the anti-bullying message, which he has been getting national notoriety from. And Anthony Iani, a more local feel here, he's a former Michigan State men's basketball player and national motivational speaker at the Michigan Department of Civil Rights, preaching autism awareness and a similar message to Marvelous Mark Mero's when it comes to anti-bullying. So he will be joining me around the 1:30 mark. You don't want to miss that. All right, now, before we proceed, I want to invite the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance. Isaac, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Al. Definitely sad news out of the racing front because, you know, we talk so much about football, the dangers of that, and similar sports, but some of these extreme sports like race car driving and, like you said, stock cars in NASCAR, they're just so well protected. The way that protection system actually works, it's really cool. The cars are designed as a shell almost to absorb all the impact. So they will get wrecked upon impact, but the driver inside will be totally safe and secure. I say totally safe. They're still crashing going 240 miles per hour.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, it's just the natural part of the sport, the unfortunate part of the sport. Crashes are going to happen at the end of the day, yeah.
Exactly. But definitely. Indy cars just aren't designed like that. There's no protection up top, and they're designed to be a little more stable, but even so, it doesn't make sense. Safety's got to be a priority, even if the person knowingly puts themselves in that type of situation.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, seeing the reaction from many people in the sports world, also the Wilson family, they issued a statement after his death on Monday night. And, you know, you talk about a guy and everything I've read about Justin Wilson. And you heard a montage, that montage to start the show today. And isn't it kind of eerie that last sentence that he says when he talks about the price that you pay when you are an Indy driver? That was such an eerie statement because, again, yeah, you are, you know, paying a price anytime you are, you know, inside of a car going, you know, upwards of, you know, 160, 180, near 200 miles per hour with virtually no protection over your head. Anytime you're partaking in that sport, you are taking a risk. And Justin Wilson certainly knew that. And he, of course, was fueled by his love of the sport. He's a professional in the sport now, or was a professional in the sport, and just had an undying love for it. But it's so sad because you read the statement from his family. Just a quick synopsis of it here. Quote, with deep sadness, the parents of Justin Wilson, Keith and Lynn, his wife Julia, and his brother Stefan, share the news that Justin passed away today after succumbing to injuries suffered during the Verizon IndyCar event at Pocono Raceway on Sunday. Justin was a loving father, a devoted husband, as well as a highly competitive racing driver who was respected by his peers. The family would like to thank the staff at the Lehigh Valley Health Network, Cedar Crest Hospital, Pocono Raceway, Andretti Autosport, and the Verizon IndyCar Series, as well as the entire racing community for the amazing outpouring of support from fans around the world. The family has requested that in lieu of flowers, donations be made to the Wilson Children's Fund Care of Indy. So I really think that, you know, with this incident taking place, Isaac, I really think that the upper echelons of the sport need to sit down and talk about how they do address safety within the sport. It's so unfortunate that it has to come to a point where one of you know, the players or in any sport for that matter, when talking about safety, that a player or a fan for that matter, or in this case a driver, has to have an unfortunate event, in this case Justin Wilson losing his life, for this discussion to take place. It should have taken place much earlier, but you're starting to see conversations happen now across the sporting world, across the racing world, about the safety of drivers within the sport of IndyCar racing and possibly implementing a canopy over the heads of its drivers. But it's so unfortunate because it always seems to have to, you know, get worse before it becomes better. That's just the natural cycle of anything. And unfortunately, in this case, it took Justin Wilson losing his life for this conversation to rise to the surface and really be taken legitimately.
And now, one thing is, America is such a pioneer and a leader when it comes to safety in games. Really, you can say that, sure, football is a dangerous game and baseball can be dangerous. A lot of the games America invented were dangerous. But now there are these great strides being made to make games safer. So with IndyCar not having those U.S. origins, not being as big in the U.S., as, say, NASCAR is, you have to wonder if that did have an impact, because abroad, they don't have the concussion issues with football and all of that. So their safety is not maybe the primary concern when focusing on athletics, whereas in America, it's really become in the forefront of things we care about when watching deciding whether to play a sport and all of that cycle. So, yeah, I think it is unfortunate. I think change will occur eventually because, like you said, if you put a canopy over their head, if you give them some coverage up top, everybody might go slower because of that 5 extra pounds on the car. Not just one person. It's totally worth it, and it shouldn't be a choice. It should be mandated.
I totally agree. What do you folks think about it? 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. And that is an unfortunate segue into our very first discussion here on the show. After a series of ugly incidents this season where fans were struck by foul balls, including a woman who was hit in the head by a line drive and taken away on a stretcher during the first inning of Sunday's game between the Chicago Cubs and Atlanta Braves at Wrigley Field, fan safety has become a pressing issue, one the game would be ill-advised to leave unaddressed. Last year, one estimate by Bloomberg put the fan injuries caused by foul balls at 1,750 per season, coming from an estimated 30 foul balls reaching the seats per game. That's roughly 3 injuries for every 4 games caused by anywhere from 50,000 to 70,000 foul balls per person. Interesting statistic, and we also not only saw that situation between the Chicago Cubs and the Atlanta Braves, but there was also another one at a Detroit Tigers game this past weekend as well. And now the discussion when it comes to fan safety is rising to the surface in Major League Baseball now, Isaac. And there have been some that have now proposed, including Tigers pitcher Justin Verlander. He's been such an advocate for this, and he went on record to say this again this past weekend once that injury occurred to a fan during that Tigers game. He believes that a net should encompass not only the backstop behind the home base, but maybe it should be extended even more so outward because of the amount of foul balls that we see hit throughout the course of a Major League Baseball season. And I've even heard some propose that maybe that net should be extended to throughout the entire foul line on both the left and right sides of the base. Is it going to take away from the fan experience? Of course, because not having a net to deal with when you are watching America's pastime is going to be more appealing. But at the same time, do you think this needs to happen in order to increase the safety of the fan experience at Major League Baseball ballparks?
Al, I'd like to see a small extension, maybe either to the start of the dugouts or until the first or third base, right around there. But a small extension, I think, calls for a total extension all the way to the foul pole are wholly unjustified, because I'd like to see more statistics on the breakdown of where those injuries occurred. I bet very few occurred that far out. And the other part of me says, because I am torn on this issue, the other part of me says, this is part of attending a baseball game. At the end of the day, it's unfortunate for anybody to be injured. My reactions aren't going to be good enough to stop every single ball coming at me either. But at the same time, I understand if I'm right on the third baseline, that's part of why the ticket price might not be higher, and that's part of why I'm sitting there, because mm-hmm. I feel like I'm well-equipped, well enough equipped at least, to deal with the foul ball coming towards me. And I cannot sit behind home plate. I don't know about you. I can't do it. That net really detracts from the game for me.
Yeah, well, I've been covering baseball for a while now, and you know, I mean, I've taken you out on shoots. I think the first one I took you out on was at the Diamond Classic, actually. And then I've taken you to a Lugness game and showed you how we shoot there. I mean, we're right behind the net when we do shoot. I think I've gotten so used to it as a broadcaster filming those games and having to deal with that net and to shoot highlights through that net, that it really doesn't bother me as much as the next guy. But I do get it for those that, you know, feel as though it does take away from the fan experience, like yourself. And at the end of the day, I think there are a few components to this conversation that need to be addressed as well, Isaac. I really think that there are also questions of responsibility when addressing fans who go and view a Major League Baseball game. It's one thing when adults knowingly put themselves at risk by sitting in seats that are more likely to be in the flight path of a hard hit line drive or so. You know, like the first few rows right behind home plate or on the side of a foul line. You when you sit there, you have to understand that those balls are going to come whizzing by you, and you have to be ready. You certainly have to be ready. And I really feel like individuals who have those seats don't understand the risk going in. Some do, while some just absolutely don't. And it really gets under my skin, Isaac, when I watch a Major League Baseball game and they pan to the crowd or they follow a hit that goes foul, or, you know, they follow a ball that, you know, maybe ricochets off the bat and hits that net right in back of home plate. And you look at the crowd and you see a few folks here and there sprinkled around doing this. And folks, you guys can't see me right now because this is radio, but I am actually on my iPhone 6 right now looking at my text messages. You see so many people at ballparks now that are glued to their smartphones, whether it's tweeting or Facebooking or on Snapchat. They are not paying attention at all, not looking at, you know, what's occurring within the game. And If your attention is not on the game itself and your attention is locked into your phone, what do you expect is going to happen? You are putting yourself at risk. I just don't think a lot of fans know that. So at some point, yeah, the fans have to take responsibility at the end of the day, but I understand that freak accidents happen. I'm not saying that's what occurred this past weekend, but I am saying that there are fans out there that just don't get it. And I agree with you. I think maybe you need to expand those nets, you know, possibly out a little further. I'm not saying the entire foul line needs to be, you know, tapered off with a net. But maybe you need to increase that, because at the end of the day, Isaac, even though I'm preaching over here through many folks' speakers right now, that doesn't mean that's going to change anything. Folks are going to continue to be on their smartphones, and folks are going to continue to attend these ballparks, sit in seats that they don't know that they are at a high risk at, and continue to stay on their phones at these games. So I think it's a 50-50 thing. You have to take some responsibility as a fan while at these games and not put it totally on the MLB.
Al, and I'm sure when we print our tickets, there's something in 0.07 font that says, you know, something along the lines of, you assume all risk attending the game and whatnot. Just a disclaimer. But at the same time, that also needs to be made more public, as well as, I would be interested to see how many lawsuits have occurred because of this, because at the end of the day, it's not like this is one of baseball's primary concerns historically. This isn't something they've really publicized. This isn't concussions in the NFL. This isn't soccer, high kicks, or anything like that. It's not anything that's publicized. This is fans being hit by a pitch, and it doesn't get that much media attention, so I'd be interested how many lawsuits occurred from that. The other thing I'd be interested to see is, what are the severity of these injuries? Because I'm sure some of them are rather minor and people report them to try to...
Well, if you remember, I want to say like 10, 15 years ago, remember the young woman who actually lost her life because she was sitting right in back of home plate? The ball ends up hitting her and you know, she dies. And that's where the can of worms really opened, and they started to really have these legitimate conversations about the fan safety, I should say, at Major League Ballpark. So that's where it started. Now is where the MLB will take this whole thing in the end. And I'm curious to get, you know, to hear the thoughts of folks who are listening right now. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Later on in the hour, after we bring on Anthony Iani as my guest for today's show, we are going to talk briefly about the Michigan State football team. They have just named, or D'Antonio at least, talked about Madre London, redshirt freshman, 6'1", 216. He looks to be the guy right now, Isaac. He is listed as the number one running back right now. He was very impressive throughout the scrimmage this past weekend. He talked about how he had a 40-yard TD run, a 70-yard run on Saturday as well against the number one defense, the number one squad that was out there. Quick reaction before we hit this break about Madre London being right now named as the number one guy, because this competition clearly it's not over. I want to put that out there as well. There's still, you know, a lot of camp left to happen here, and things could change today. Who knows? But right now, Madre is that guy.
I'm surprised that it was so quickly decided. And like you said, things can change in a heartbeat. But at the same time, I thought this would be a battle that continued throughout the camp.
I think it will. Might. I think it's not
I
over.
I do too.
Yeah.
But I think I'm just surprised that there is a number one that was even announced. I thought we wouldn't even know until the Western Michigan game.
Mm-hmm. Right. That long, huh?
Well, I think it would have been that long with four different contesting running backs. Sometimes it does take that long.
Just very true. And you know, I'm looking at the quotes from yesterday's practice as well. And Gerald Holmes, L.J. Scott, Delton Williams all are still getting high remarks in lieu of the fact that Madre London is, you know, named the number one guy. But still, Gerald Holmes, Scott, and Williams are also still impressing throughout camp as well. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be chatting with former MSU men's basketball player and national motivational speaker at the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. You know who I'm talking about. Anthony Iani, folks. Let's hit our first break. Come on right back. You don't want to miss that. You're listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
Anthony Iani is making a huge difference in Michigan today and has the potential of impacting the anti-bullying movement all across the nation. He has overcome the struggles that come from growing up with and living with autism, and is a role model today, not just for kids with autism, but for everybody, and how you can really overcome obstacles, overcome challenges, and really change the face of the planet.
He's very passionate about certain things, and that passion has shown greatly with our basketball team. But now as I watch him and watch the TV and listen to him speak at places all over this state, in fact all over the country, as he's starting to branch out, his word, his mission is much bigger than Michigan State, than the state of Michigan, than autism in general. It's just bigger than that.
At the age of 4, Anthony Iani was diagnosed with pervasive developmental disorder, which is on the autism spectrum. Doctors and specialists told Anthony's parents that he would barely graduate from high school, would never graduate from college, would never have a shot at being an athlete, and would likely live in a group institution with other autistic kids for his adult life. His family was devastated but pledged they would help Anthony be successful no matter what. And he is. Despite bullies, adversity, and numerous personal challenges, Anthony worked hard and never gave up. Not only did he earn his bachelor's degree from Michigan State University in sociology, he is the first known athlete with autism to play Big Ten basketball. Anthony, of course, played for legendary coach Tom Izzo, who you just heard, while at MSU. He won 2 Big Ten championships, a Big Ten tournament title, was the recipient of the 2011 Tim Bogracus Walk-On Award and the 2012 Unsung Player Award, and was also a member of the 2010 Final Four team. Anthony has now pledged his life and career to help those who face similar challenges. He has been invited to tell his story and share his message across the country, and has inspired countless individuals to live your dreams, and it's only just begun. Anthony Iani, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports.
Good to be here, Al. Thanks for having me.
And it's such a pleasure. I mean, hearing your story, every time I hear about it or read about it, I mean, I instantly, myself, become inspired. First off, this is actually your first time on our airwaves. I want you to talk about what growing up was like for you, a kid who was diagnosed with autism.
I mean, it was tough because I mean, there are a lot of different parts of the spectrum for kids with autism. I mean, there's high functioning where, I mean, that's me, where I, to you, I look absolutely normal right now. I'm talking to you, communicating with you. And then there's low functioning where most kids have to be helped out quite a bit. Where growing up, I had a lot of challenges, you know, especially in school. I had a tough time understanding nouns, verbs, idioms, and sarcasm. I still struggle with sarcasm today, but I'm better at it than what I was 10 years ago. But that's why I struggled in school quite a bit, especially with taking tests, because there'd be words and sentences or phrases I would get mixed up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would just take things so seriously, and kids really took advantage of that. But it wasn't until my freshman year of high school, my parents told me what those professionals told them when I was 5. And that kind of became my motivation to be like, all right, I'm not going to let some group of doctors and professionals decide my future. I'm going to decide it. So I had to work extremely hard at not just a basketball, but at school. I had a lot of support from family and friends. And more importantly, I was motivated. So I managed to graduate from Okemos High School in 2007, played on a couple of great teams. We had the 06 team that was state runner-up, probably played in the greatest Class A state championship game in Michigan high school basketball history. Went to Grand Valley State for 2 years. Proud to say I'm 1-0 against Coach Izzo. We beat him my freshman year. So
that's pretty good, right?
It's not bad. But then we beat Grand Valley State, you know, when I came back, so I'm 1-0 against both schools. So there's an advantage to both that. But, you know, when I came here, it was a bit of a struggle because my first year I was like, okay, so I had to adapt, like, to that hardworking mentality that Coach Izzo loves. And luckily, you know, he's watched me play my whole life, and he knew how much of a hard worker I was going to be. And so had to work hard, had to earn a lot of respect around here because, you know, the position my dad has, because a lot of people thought I was here because of him, but I wasn't. And I wanted to go out and prove people that I was here for me and nothing else. And I wanted to show people that I was going to get my degree no matter what. And like you said, I didn't even know about this until after I graduated, but you said I was the first known athlete with autism to play Big Ten basketball. But I'm actually the first Division I basketball player in NCAA history diagnosed with it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So looking at the entire spectrum of NCAA Division I hoops across the board in this nation, you are the first one.
I'm the first.
To be diagnosed with autism. Wow. That's unbelievable. And, you know, going back, I want to rewind real quick to something you just said. I mean, you said that your parents waited until high school to tell you what the doctors told them when you were 4 years old. And, mm-hmm. you know, the whole spiel I gave about, you know, they didn't think that you would, you know, amount to where you are right now. Are you glad they waited that long to tell you that, or do you wish they would have told you earlier?
No, I'm glad they did, because I think throughout, like, my early ages of my life, I think they wanted me to live a normal life as much as possible, and then I think they wanted to wait till I was a little more mature so I could understand the situation. I think they thought high school would be the best time to do it, and I think they also figured that, you know, it'll light his fire, and then he'll just go beyond places where he never thought he can go, and that's what it did. And so I'm glad they told me just before I turned a freshman in high school. It was like perfect timing.
That was perfect timing. I'm sure you used that as motivation and continue to do so. Now, the issue of bullying when you were growing up, I mean, how did you handle and what sort of things did you go through as a kid growing up and being bullied?
I mean, I was bullied a lot because I was bigger than everybody else. I mean, when I was in sixth grade, I was 6 feet tall and I wore a size 13 shoe.
Wow.
And a lot of kids made fun of me for being bigger than everybody else. But those kids that bullied me had to play me in Little League basketball, and I dropped like 20 points on one of them. And after that, he never said a word to me. But the cool thing was, as I got older, was whenever people were messing with me or disrespecting me, I had my friends who had my back saying, hey, you know, watch him tonight. He's going to go out and prove you wrong in this game. And then I would go out, play hard, do what I can do, and then the next day nobody would say a word. So I had my crew, if you will, to back me up. And that's what's so great about having friends and families, that they can back you up no matter what. But obviously, you know, the other reason why I was bullied is because I have autism. Because when I was in first grade, I did and said things that were, quote unquote, different than everybody else. And that's why people made fun of me. And, you know, I had one kid who actually tricked me, who I thought he was a fifth grader. I thought he was my boy. I thought he was my guy.
You thought he was your friend.
I thought he was my friend. Because, mm-hmm. you know, most kids with autism want friends when they grow up. That's what they want. And that's kind of how I felt about this kid. But then one day, him and his buddies pushed my friends away from me at recess, and him and his boys tricked me into putting my tongue on a frozen pole because they knew I would do it.
Oh, no.
But fast forward to 18 years later, I'm walking out of the arena, the Breslin Center, and who's outside waiting for me with a basketball and a Sharpie in both hands? It's that same fifth grader. And I was like, wait, what? Like, what is this guy doing here? And so he asked me, can you sign this ball for me and my little brother? But as I'm signing the ball, I remember one thing. This guy didn't have a brother or sister. So the message I have for kids today are be careful what you say and do to others, because you never know who that person is going to be in the future.
Life is a funny thing, right?
It really is. It really is.
Again, folks, if you're just now tuning in to WKAR's Current Sports, we're chatting with Anthony Iani, of course, former MSU men's basketball player and national motivational speaker at the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. Now, for you, Ant, you talked about your support system, which really helped you to get through that bullying phase and motivated you throughout life. What made you, coupled with that, of course, you know, being, what made you really a fighter? And why do you think so many kids are bullied, who are bullied growing up, I should say? Why do you think so many kids today just kind of give up on life? Because we see so many times kids who are just, you know, committing suicide due to their stint in school, in which kids are bullying them. I mean, what made you a fighter, and why do you think so many kids today give up?
Well, I have Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, I think, for that, because he gave me my opportunity to start somewhere. And he gave me the opportunity to be a keynote speaker at an autism function in Detroit just before I graduated here in 2012. Mm-hmm. And that's when I kind of knew I got done. I told my wife, I said, you know what? This is where I belong. I said, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but this is where I belong. And so St. John's Middle School was the first middle school to give me that opportunity. And after that opportunity, I just ran with it. You know, I changed a lot over the years, because looking back on how I started out almost 3 years ago, that's like, I go, man, that's how I spoke. Like, you know, that's how I did things. And looking on it now, it's like, okay, it's like watching film and basketball. Okay, I did this well, but I got to go back, add this, do that. And so, but I tell kids, I had a kid ask me up in St. Clair Shores, what motivates me? And this was before my son was born. And I said, you know, it's you guys that motivate me. It's the kids that motivate me, because it's 12,000 kids in a school that motivate me to wake up at 5:30 in the morning, go on the road five days a week at most, and go and motivate these kids. But now with my son being born, my son Knox motivates me to be the best father I can be and be the best speaker that I can be. Because when my son gets older, I want him to look at what I've did throughout my life and say to his friends, you know, my dad is the most inspirational person that I know. You know, my dad overcame this, overcame that. And so I want my son to use that as motivation too, so he can be great at what he does. But the bullying piece you talk about today is that, you know, I think the reason why kids are bullying others is because of the generation we're in. Because, you know, obviously with you and me growing up, we didn't have Twitter probably until the end of high school. We didn't have Facebook until beginning of high school. And social media has really played a huge part in that, which is, you know, the cyberbullying. And I tell kids everywhere I go that people who cyberbully, Al, those are just gutless cowards, because they're afraid to walk up to that other person and say what they need to say to them face to face, because they're scared and they're intimidated by that person.
As Tom Izzo would say, I mean, you know, these are cowards hiding behind a keyboard.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And you wonder why Coach Izzo does not like Twitter.
Right.
And that's why, because of stuff like that. But the other thing people get bullied for, too, is because they're quote-unquote different traits, whether it's their hair color, eye color, skin color, or if they're diagnosed with a learning disability, whether they have autism. Like, people think they could overpower those people and think they're better than that, but they're not. And that's why some kids lose hope. But when I go to schools, my hope and my goal is to try and go out and inspire at least one person, you know, make an impact, leave an impact, even if it is one person. You know, if it's the entire sixth grade class, great, cool. If it's just one person in seventh grade, I'm all right with that. But if it's the entire school, I'm definitely, you know, going to be fine with that. But the one thing I love about my job, Al, is when I get kids walk up to me and share these stories, these personal stories that they don't even share with principals, teachers, or family. And I'm looking at them like, why are you telling me these stories? Like, why aren't you telling somebody else's? But they just open up to me, and I feel like I'm doing something right. So,
because they can relate to you.
Right, exactly. Because I've been there, I've done that, and, you know, where I'm at today, they can relate to me saying, if Anthony Iani can go out and do this throughout his life, I can go out and do this too.
Now, I want to talk about those responses that you have gotten, Ant, from different kids that you have talked to in different schools that you have, preached your motivational message to. Without, of course, not putting any names on these responses, but can you tell me of one of the most compelling responses you've gotten during, you know, your time speaking to them?
Yeah, well, I got a couple of them. Well, the first one, St. John's Middle School, I was in my office the next day, and I got a phone call from a mother who has a son with autism, and she told me her son had one of the greatest days ever because not only did he meet somebody like him, somebody on the autism spectrum, but because her son's bully walked up to him after I left and apologized to him. And that was 5 years of torturing and bullying this kid because he has autism. And it didn't just stop there, Al. It happened at multiple places all over our state. and even at places I've been to all over the country, like Portland, Eastchester, New York, and even Cleveland, Ohio. And I tell people all the time, okay, if it could happen in places like that, why not anywhere? I mean, it's even happened in Flint, Michigan, which I know Flint has gone through a ton over the years. And I said to myself, Flint, Michigan, why not anywhere? But I'm not the reason for that. It's the kids. They're the reason for the change. I'm there for an hour, 2 hours to speak, and I'm gone. They got to make the change. The challenge is up to them, you know, to make that change. Same thing with teachers. So I lay down the challenge, I walk out, and I'll check in with the principal a week later. But the messages I get from my fan page on Facebook, my Instagram, just kids telling me how they thought about, you know, had suicidal thoughts, you know, the day I came in, and after I left, they said, it's not worth it. I'm going to change my life around. I'm not going to let one person drive me down and bring me down. I'm going to determine how I'm going to run my life and nobody else. And wow. Actually, when Chris Solari was writing a story about me back in February, I showed him one of those responses from a, you know, student out here in East Lansing. You know, I showed him that. And he was just like, you know, how many of those do you get? I said, on a weekly basis, I get a lot. And I told Chris, I said, that's one of the many highlights of my job is that right there. And I'm proud of it.
I'm sure. Wow. That's jaw-dropping stuff. And now for you, Ant, I mean, did you ever think that your motivational speaking endeavors would grow to be this big? And how did it come about? How did you link up with the Michigan Department of Civil Rights to really grow this thing? I think it's dubbed the Relentless Tour. Can you talk about that whole thing?
Yeah, so I first started out with a nonprofit in Detroit called the Autism Alliance in August 2012, so 3 years ago. And I started doing speaking here and there on the side, and one of my colleagues brought up the bullying, you know, piece, because kids with autism are the number one targets for bullies across schools in America. Mm. So I was like, okay, I'll take this on too. And then I got together with a team saying, hey, what if you did this? What if you went to all the middle schools in the state of Michigan, which is 659, in 1 year to promote autism awareness and anti-bullying awareness? So when we first launched it in October 2013, we got a huge response from it. We had high schools, elementary schools, and private schools that were calling us. And I just said, you know what, just drop the middle schools and let's just do as many schools as we can in the state. It's not about the number. It's about making an impact and, you know, laying down, you know, the challenge for all these schools in the state to make a change in their communities. And so the Relentless Tour started off as a statewide initiative, mm-hmm. and it's gone to a nationwide initiative in just a year and a half. And never did I think, Al, that it was going to go just like that. I mean, it's crazy how my speaking has taken off. And one of my sponsors out of Chicago, who are Michigan State alums, they do marketing insurance. You know, the guy who owns the place, Tom Bilo, and his brother Mike, Tom has a son with autism who was just recently diagnosed. And Autism Speaks named me one of the 10 inspirational individuals who inspired 2014 with autism. And they had me number one on the list, which I was very honored and humbled by that.
Wow.
And Tom reached out to me, and our relationship began to grow and grow. He's getting me in the corporate businesses more to speak to. But he actually threw this comparison out, and I was very shocked by this statement he said to me. He said, at the rate you're going right now, you're on your way to being the next Tony Robbins.
Really?
And I sat there, I looked at him, I go, Tony Robbins is one of the greatest motivational speakers in the entire world. I mean, E.T., Eric Thomas, same deal.
Like, love E.T. He's one of my mentors in college.
Yeah, like E.T., like he came and spoke to us a couple times when I was here at Michigan State. And I love E.T. I love the work he does. And when he mentioned, put my name and Tony Robbins in the same sentence, I said, I'm not even close to that. Like, why? Mm-hmm. I said, why would you even say that to me? He goes, because the rate you're going, it's heading that direction. And after I realized, Al, that, you know, I'm not saying this to my own horn because I really mean this. Mm-hmm. And you and I talked about it too.
Yeah.
I think I am the best at what I do in the state. You know, I got a lot more work to do. You know, my next goal is to be the best in the country one day. I got a lot of work to do that. And then one day go the entire distance, go the full distance and be the best in the world. And I got a lot of work to do that. But for somebody to mention me and the great Tony Robbins in the same sentence, that was truly a humbling remark. And it was a big honor for me. You know, just to hear those two names together.
Well, Ant, you are certainly on the right track, my brother. And I want to talk about, you know, where do you go from here? I mean, when's your next speaking engagement? How can people out there who are listening, who, you know, possibly want to take their kid to one of your events and to hear you speak? I mean, what do you got on your schedule right now?
So right now, I start back up in 8 days at Lutheran West, which was my wife's alma mater.
Really? Oh,
so,
wow.
So my wife, my brother-in-law, and my sister-in-law all went there, and they're the first school I'm speaking at this year. So
wow.
I'm pretty excited for that.
What date is that?
September 2nd.
Okay.
And it's in Westland. But if people are interested in scheduling me or want to come out, relentlesstour.com, you know, is where people schedule, can request for my, you know, services. And then there's a calendar on there too to see where I'm going to be and what states I'm going to go to. And I got a busy September coming up, but it's like you and I talked about over the break. You know, just seeing what my friends have done this summer, like Travis Bader, like Draymond Green, all the success they had with basketball, it's motivated me even more and more to go out there and be the best speaker I can be. And to quote Coach D, I'm ready to let the lion out of the cage, man. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get back on the road. I'm ready to get back to work. And I'm just really excited. And then 2 days later, we get to watch our boys go out to Western and kick butt.
There you go. And it's a pretty good schedule, if I might add.
I like it.
And folks, we want to let you guys know that Ant will also be a guest very soon on Current Sports TV, so you do not want to miss that as well. There you have it, the one, the only, Anthony Iani, former MSU men's basketball player and national motivational speaker at the Michigan Department of Civil Rights. Ant, it's been a pleasure, my man.
Thanks, Al. I appreciate it.
All right, let's start taking a break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on Tuesday's edition of Current Sports by talking about the Detroit Tigers falling hard to the Cincinnati Reds last night. And, of course, yeah, Madre London winning that top running back battle for the Michigan State football team. All that and so much more. Don't touch that dial. You are listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870.
Now when the sun come up, I'll be there to say what.
Welcome back. You are tuned into Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870. We have about 7 minutes left in the show. We just finished chatting with Anthony Iani, former MSU men's basketball player, who is now a motivational speaker, preaching the message of anti-bullying as well as autism awareness. How cool was that, Isaac, huh?
Al, really special. We've had a couple of motivational speakers on recently who... just what great stories. Mark Merrow, then, of course, DeAndre Carter, now Anthony Iani. That's a superstar list right there.
It certainly is. And again, you talk about the messages that they're preaching. I think it's so relevant to today's society because of the amount of countless bullying stories we hear, not only here in the state of Michigan, but nationwide, and kids who are just going through a lot of things throughout their life. And, you know, just really tough stuff. And so many kids deciding to take that unfortunate route of taking their lives. Just very, very sad stuff. So with only about 5 minutes left here in the show, we wanted to bring a feature to you on Ray Bentley, who, of course, played pro football for 10 years, including in 2 Super Bowls with the Buffalo Bills. He has a new book dropping entitled Driftwood, Ray's very first novel. Scott Pohl actually got a chance to chat with Ray about this incredible book. Due to time constraints, we're going to bring that feature to you and push it to tomorrow, folks, so you do not want to miss that. But I want to wrap up today's show by going back and chatting about MSU football for a sec here, Isaac. And again, we talked about, you know, Madre London being named as the number one guy, the number one running back for the squad right now. Coach D addressed that after yesterday's practice. He had a pretty good scrimmage. Again, he talked about, you know, how he had a 40-yard TD run and a 70-yard run on Saturday as well during that scrimmage at Spartan Stadium. But I want to preface this conversation by saying, of course, the competition is not over because, you know, D'Antonio talked about how Gerald Hones and LJ Scott have been having great preseason training workouts. Delton Williams is getting there. Of course, Delton being absent from the beginning of camp due to that off-season incident where he was found to have brandished a firearm in a road rage incident. He returned to the team a bit late. He didn't get that conditioning in, you know, that other players got. So he's still trying to get back into that groove. But Gerald Holmes and LJ Scott aren't too far away from Madre London in that battle. And every time you talk about this running back core, very hard remarks, you know, and they all seem to be making a profound impact throughout camp. So this is a battle. Even though Madre is listed as numero uno,
this is a battle that is going to continue. And I think you'll see, you know, possibly Gerald Holmes be, you know, sprinkled throughout the year as also a guy who can make a tremendous impact throughout the season for this team, Isaac. And going back to even the spring game, I mean, the writing on the wall was there, so to speak, because in the spring game, looking at Madre London's numbers, I mean, he led all players with 70 rushing yards and on 9 attempts, including a game-long 50-yard game. So Madre has been showing that he can play dating back to the spring game. So it's really this really should be no surprise that he has been named as number one guy moving forward here.
Yeah, Al, it's not a surprise because Madre, you know, he was redshirted last year. He's coming in as a redshirt freshman, but he was so hyped coming out. He's from Florida. And he was number 17 ranked in that state. So he's really an incredible player. Scott, he's a nice mixed back. He's got good pace, but also he's got some strength to him. He's 6'1", 212. And Madre is going to – he's really going to bring a balanced, consistent running back to this team where the others might be more slated towards either power or speed. And Madre is kind of that – nice hybrid in between.
Yeah, he certainly is. And also some more news to come out of yesterday's practice is, of course, John Reschke. He's actually pushing Chris Frey for that quote-unquote money linebacker position. Of course, that is the former spot of Ed Davis, who went down with a season-ending injury to his knee the first day of pads. So Reschke and Frey, you know, involved in some healthy competition as well. And, you know, briefly talking about the guys out in Ann Arbor, U of M, the Maize and Blue. This quarterback battle at Michigan is very interesting, Isaac, and it's being said that there still isn't a clear-cut number one quarterback for the Maize and Blue as the season quickly approaches now. Of course, that battle is between senior Jake Ruddock, who is a transfer from Iowa, and junior Shane Morris. Now, you know, looking at different reports from beat writers who have been covering this team throughout preseason training camp, it looks as though Jake has been getting more reps. But again, they went on record yesterday to say that there is no number one guy as of yet. This is going to be a close battle as well to look forward to as the days now dwindle down. Before the start of the very first game, Michigan will take on Utah, of course, to begin their year, Isaac.
Yeah, Al, I would be surprised if Ruddock doesn't get it just because I think he's the guy coming in with all the hype. And I think Shane Morris got a decent chance last year to show what he could do. And he, needless to say, he did not really impress, Michigan missing a bowl game. So I'd be surprised if Ruddock doesn't get it, especially because he's been decent the past few years.
Yeah, certainly. All right. Well, we'll continue that discussion on tomorrow's Current Sports. Also, again, we'll bring that that feature on Ray Bentley from Current State's own Scott Pohl, as well as we'll have national sports insider and accredited author John Greenberg. He'll be joining us to talk about the issue of trophies for participation in youth sports. You don't want to miss that and so much more on tomorrow's show. Special thanks to Anthony Iani for being a part of today's show and to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.